And thanks for the invitation to Tom Heard. It's my first trip to Toronto, and I seem to have brought the bad weather with me. Is the mic okay? Can everybody hear and it's not too loud? Yeah. Okay, so I want to talk about real options and valuing the option to invest with an incomplete market. And the paper, there's a paper with this exact title. If you're interested, you can get it on this website afterwards and look me up at Princeton. Okay, so just to introduce the problem, we want to look at the problem of a company making an investment decision. So when is it optimal for this company to make an investment? And you can think about this in a real options framework. So you can think about this decision to invest as being like an option. So you pay some money, which is like the strike of a call option, and you receive some cash flows from this project. So you can put it into a framework of a call option. And this is relatively recent kind of area that emerged in the 90s. So what I want to do is typically these models are in a complete market type of setting, whereas really, realistically, if you're thinking about these options being on real assets, so an investment in a project, say building a factory or something, then this project value is not really a traded quantity. So you can't really go to a financial market and buy and sell it. So using a complete market is a big assumption. So I want to look at incompleteness and thinking about sort of non-tradability of this real asset and seeing how that affects the value of the option and how that affects the investment timing decision. Stick that underneath. Okay, so there are some sort of classical models in this area. I've mentioned one of them being a kind of complete model where essentially you hedge the risk of this option in the usual sort of way dynamically, and you're basically assuming that this project value is a traded asset or that there's another asset out there perfectly correlated with it which you can do your hedging in. And there's another model by McDonald and Siegel, this model here, and they basically have that investors are risk averse towards market risk. So that's the part that you could hedge with this sort of market traded asset, but they're risk neutral to any unhedgeable type of risk. So I'm calling that idiosyncratic risk. So these two sort of approaches, the complete market and this McDonald and Siegel approach, I'm going to sort of refer to those as classic models because they're sort of the basis of the current literature. And in my model, I'll basically recover those two models as special cases. So what I want to do is introduce what I'm calling a partial spanning asset. So rather than assuming I have a fully an asset that I can hedge with that's perfectly correlated with my project value, I'm just going to assume a partially correlated, a correlated asset instead. So I have this partial spanning asset, so there'll be some unhedgeable risk. And this asset could be the market itself, some industry benchmark, maybe an individual stock. That would depend on the application. So the manager of this company is basically making this investment decision, and I'm going to assume it's over an infinite horizon. And again, that's to sort of stay in the framework of these classic models. The McDonald and Siegel model have an infinite horizon. So this is just to extend their framework. The other crucial, okay, that's just sort of saying things in words that I'm going to define in a minute. So you want to choose the time to invest, and you want to trade in this partial spanning asset. And what I'm going to do is have this manager maximizing the expected utility of wealth, where wealth consists of this option and this trading portfolio. So you have two components to this wealth. And then I'm going to use certainty equivalence or utility and difference pricing to decide what the value of this option is, and that just sort of tells you what, how much money that the manager requires to give up this option. Okay, so that's an overview of what's going to happen. And now to define the model. These are our assumptions. Okay, so the manager can invest at this cost K. K is a constant, and this investment cost is just going to grow over time at the risk-free rate. I need that assumption, well, it's a reasonable assumption to make, and I also get a closed-form solution in this setup. So the investment cost is K e to the R tor minus T, and the value of the project cash flows is what the manager receives when he pays this amount, and that will just follow an exponential Brownian motion. This can be generalized beyond the exponential Brownian motion to a diffusion, basically, but to be explicit, I just want to assume this. So you basically have this call option payoff because you would only pay, you would only invest if you're going to get a positive return from the investment. So that's why it's like a call option. So we have this exponential Brownian motion V. The crucial thing to keep in your mind is its sharp ratio, which is xi. So it has drift nu. The sharp ratio is the excess return nu minus r over the volatility eta. And the manager is going to invest in the bank account with a constant interest rate R and an asset P. So this is like our market asset. And the crucial thing here is rather than being perfectly correlated with V, it has correlation rho. So this Brownian motion B is correlated with the Brownian motion W. So we can write things in this form where we think of the Brownian motion driving the project value as a sort of hedgeable part driven by the asset we can hedge in, and an independent part. Oh, I do have a pointer. Is that, would that be better? Okay. Let me just. I assume this is a pointer. Ah, oh, it's one of these. Okay. Okay. You can only just see that. Okay, so we can split up the Brownian motion W into a hedgeable part because we can hedge and trade this asset P plus an unhedgeable, an independent unhedgeable part by this independent Brownian motion Z. Okay, and we're letting the manager trade in P, so that gives us a wealth process X. So that's just the trading in P given by this part plus the leftover money just sitting in the bank account growing at rate R. So unless the correlation is 1, there's some kind of extra risk that's unhedgeable by trading in the asset P. And what we want to do is define how the manager treats or reacts to that unhedgeable risk. And we're going to think about an exponential utility function, which is of this form. This choice is, well, mathematically, this means you can get a closed form solution to this problem. So it's much nicer than doing a numerical solution because we can really see how this compares to the classic models. So the manager maximizes the value of the firm by maximizing the expected utility as described here. So we have this optimal stopping problem. He wants to choose the optimal time to invest. He wants to choose the optimal hedging strategy in the traded asset P. And then he wants the expected utility of the overall wealth. So the wealth is this trading portfolio X plus the option. Okay, so there's a subtlety here in that we have an infinite horizon problem. There's no time on this side, so this doesn't depend on time. But we need to think about the utility at time tor, at the time he makes the investment. Okay, so usually when we think about utilities, we think of them being at a fixed horizon, whereas this investment time is some stopping time in an infinite horizon problem. So you have to be careful about how you define this problem. Basically, if we think of a finite horizon problem rather than an infinite horizon problem, then you can basically invest optimally according to exponential utility between this time tor and the finite horizon. And you have to kind of back out what utility function is consistent with doing that at time tor. So let me just sort of talk through that in a bit more detail so that we can see where this comes from. Okay, so if we think about a simpler problem, just a sort of classical Merton problem, we think about a problem with two dates, just a finite horizon T dash instead of the infinite horizon that we were thinking about. And then we have exponential utility for wealth at time T dash. A T dash is just some constant, and gamma T dash is the risk aversion coefficient at that date. Then if we solve the traditional Merton problem, which is just to maximize the expected utility of wealth at that fixed time T dash, and you're just maximizing over your investment in the risky asset, so there's no option happening here, then this is the form of the solution. So the value function just takes this form, and the optimal theta just takes this form. So modulo discounting, you just have a constant amount of wealth here. And the crucial thing is, the crucial factor that appears is this one here. So the Sharpe ratio on the traded asset, P, is appearing in this factor. So this factor will come into our problem, will come into our utility over the infinite horizon problem. So if we now think about a second date, that was just one date, T dash. If we now think about an earlier time, capital T, keep in mind the real problem where we have this investment time tor. And then we ask the question, how do we value wealth at this earlier time? If we think about splitting up the time horizon into these two sections, and we invest optimally over the second part of the horizon, capital T to T dash, then this is what we would get on the right-hand side. So we're still optimizing here over the first part of the time period, but this factor in here has just come from investing optimally according to the Merton solution from T to T dash. So this lambda Sharpe ratio factor appears, and this extra discounting here appears. So this is basically just from the value function of the Merton problem. And now if we want to make this consistent with the T dash cash flows, then the utility function at capital T, we want it to take this exponential form, and this forces relationships between all these constants at the different times, the AT and the AT dash, and the gamma T and gamma T dash. So all we're really doing is sort of working out, using the value function, the implied utility function at that earlier date for things to be time consistent. So if we do that, the bottom line is we end up with something of this form at this intermediate time capital T. So all that's happened here is we've got this Sharpe ratio factor coming in and this extra discounting at the riskless rate factor. But the crucial thing here is the T dash has actually disappeared here. We no longer have any dependence on the final horizon. And therefore, we can go through the same argument and think about an infinite horizon, and the T-dash isn't there anymore in this specification. So this is exactly the specification we need to think about to value the wealth at the investment time tour. Okay, because despite the fact that we have an infinite horizon, that hasn't come into this at the end of the day. So we can use that time consistent exponent utility, and if we do that, then the value function that we saw, or the value function for this problem, solves this nonlinear Bellman equation. So we have this messy looking nonlinear term here, and we have boundary matching, boundary value matching, and smooth pasting conditions. Okay, so this is very much like what happens in the classic models, although we now have this sort of nonlinearity happening here, whereas in the classic models you always end up with a linear Bellman equation, which is simpler. So the rest of this solution looks like that. So the optimal, because we have an infinite horizon, the optimal investment time, the stopping time, is just the first time that the discounted value, if we stick the discounting over this side, the discounted value of V hits some constant level, which I'm calling V tilde. I've put a rho and a gamma here just to denote that we're in the incomplete problem where we have a correlation and a risk aversion coming into it. But this is just some constant value that we can work out. Okay. So now, what's nice about this specification and this problem is that we can basically solve this in closed form. So what we do, I won't go through the details because of time, but because we're using exponent utility, you can factor out the wealth from the problem, and then you can propose a power type solution to that Bellman equation. And if you do that, you can then get rid of the nonlinearity if you just choose a particular power. So it can all be reduced to a linear equation, and then we end up with a solution of this form. So we end up with the investment trigger V tilde solving this equation here. Okay, so that's a simple representation for this investment level V tilde. We end up with this beta 1, which is equal to this. So this sharp, that the sharp ratio on the project value is xi, the sharp ratio on the market is lambda, and that's the correlation. So these are the crucial quantities coming in here. And if this beta 1 is bigger than 0, then the firm should invest at the time tor star, and the investment trigger takes this form. And beta 1 bigger than 0 corresponds to the project sharp ratio being lower than this quantity here. Okay. And then if beta is negative, or equivalently the sharp ratio is too high, then there's no solution because the smooth pasting condition fails. Okay, so in that case, the firm should just wait forever and postpone investment indefinitely. Okay, we can also write down the value function, and it takes this form. So we have a kind of power factor coming in here, and the crucial power is this beta 1. And we can also write down the value of the option itself. By using a utility indifference or certainty equivalence argument. So all we do is think about how much the manager should So you think about the manager investing in the market and the bank account and receiving some cash amount versus the expected utility from having the option itself. So how much cash would you want to replace the option? So that's the argument. And you just compare the expected utility from both sides and work out the amount of cash that gives you. So if you do that, you end up with this equation here for the option value. And we can see that, again, there's this power factor with the power beta 1, and V tilde appears here, and V tilde solves the equation on the previous slide. Okay, so we can basically get an explicit representation here for the value of the option to invest in this incomplete setting, and then we can compare this to the simpler cases. So the crucial thing is we have the correlation here that appears. We have the gamma, which is the risk aversion coefficient from the exponential utility. We have the investment trigger V tilde and this quantity beta. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Do you mean in practice? In practice, what people do is in practice, people don't really take this option approach, and they just compare some kind of estimated discounted cash flows from making the investment to the cost of the investment. So they come up with, I guess, forecasts of what drilling for oil, what cash flows they're going to get back from that. So that might be related to the price of oil, say. So in that case, the stochastic process would somehow represent the price of oil, and there'd be some kind of quantity floating around. So you can think of it as being like an oil price, say. And in that case, the price of oil is a traded thing, so we wouldn't really go down this route. But that's the simplest example I can think of. And in that case, it would be reasonable to have a stochastic model for what the oil price is going to do, say. Okay, so we can get this representation for the option price, this closed form solution. I'll just talk a bit more, and then eventually I'm going to put up some graphs of the option value and the investment trigger level and things. So a lot of these things should be, more nicely represented on a graph. Okay, the other representation we can get is we can write this option value as in an optimal stopping sort of representation. So we can write this option price as in this way. And what we can compare this to is in the complete case, it's like we have a perpetual American call option. And in that case, it would be reasonable to write, the representation for the price in that case is just the supremum over stopping times of the expectation under what would be the risk neutral measure of the option payoff. Okay, so that would look somewhat different to what's written here. But that's a special case of this representation. And a second special case is the McDonald-Siegel model. Okay, so this is kind of a related representation to just the usual representation for a perpetual call option in a complete market. And the differences are that we now have nonlinearity. So we have this exponential and the log factor coming into it, basically from the exponential utility that we've chosen. So we have E to the power of the option payoff, whereas if we had a complete market, then we would just have the option payoff itself appearing linearly in this expression. The other difference is the pricing we'll measure here is no longer a risk-neutral measure because we're in an incomplete market. So Q naught is actually the minimal martingale measure, and that's the measure under which the traded asset has drift R. Okay, so P has to have drift R, and we've changed the drift on B such that that's the case and called that B naught. And the other Brownian motion Z, the independent Brownian motion Z, is left unchanged under Q naught. So the project value V under this new measure Q naught has this SDE. So its drift has changed from nu to nu minus lambda e to rho. So this factor basically comes into it. And this is exactly the minimal martingale measure, which appears in incomplete markets. So the differences are the nonlinearity and the fact you get the minimal martingale measure. And the same kind of things happen if we were thinking about many other models in which people have looked at non-traded assets with European options and finite American options and things. These same features emerge in those situations as well, which Tom is well aware of, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. You need, like, dividends or something or some extra factor, yeah. 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 Yeah, even, so if I took the complete version of this, then it would be optimal to exercise exactly for that reason, yeah. Okay, so I think I've said everything on the next slide. The other thing we can think about is How does this differ from the classic models, what I'm calling the complete market and the McDonald and Siegel model? So in the complete market, we would get this Bellman equation. If the correlation was 1, the Bellman equation would collapse to this. Or if we just started with that model, we would get this Bellman equation with these boundary value matching and smooth pasting conditions, and we would get the same kind of investment trigger, invest when the discounted value of V hits some constant trigger level. The crucial things here and the differences to the incomplete case are the form of the beta here doesn't have the rho anymore because the rho is 1. But the other crucial thing is, in the complete case, the critical value here of beta has switched from 0 to 1. Remember, this was a 0 in the incomplete model, and it's a 1 in the complete model. So you compare the Sharpe ratio of the project to the Sharpe ratio of the traded asset, rather than what I had was lambda rho plus eta on 2. And this would be the form, the kind of classical American perpetual option value, and the investment trigger takes this well-known form as well. Okay, so this is just because beta is bigger than 1, this factor is bigger than 1, and you will always wait until the project value exceeds K, the investment cost. Okay, so all I really wanted to say on this slide was that the critical thing here is that this critical value of beta is different to in the incomplete model. And that's going to lead to interesting things happening in this setup. And similarly, in the McDonald and Siegel model, I'll just briefly put up this slide. Okay, I don't want to worry too much about this, but the way they do things is they think about a required rate of return on the investment in equilibrium. Okay, and if they do this in a certain standard way, they end up getting that. They end up with this Bellman equation 18 here, and they end up with beta 1 of the same form that I had. So this is exactly the same as in the incomplete model. But again, they have a critical value here of 1 rather than 0. So again, the problem it has a solution when the project value Sharpe ratio is less than lambda rho, whereas in the incomplete model, I had a plus eta on 2 here. Okay, so we're going to get different regions where things are happening in the incomplete case. Now, I don't want to go through too much of this. Hang on, is it that slide? Hang on. You invest if the project Sharpe ratio is lower than this lambda rho. And if it's the other way, you never invest, yeah. Well, but yeah. Well, we can talk about that afterwards. Okay. So the critical thing is that in these special cases, you end up with a different kind of critical value for when you invest versus when you wait forever. And therefore, this is going to sort of give us different behavior in these different models. Sorting through all these slides. Okay, so what we can say is if we let the correlation tend to 1 in the incomplete model, then the beta, the V tilde, and the option value all tend to the corresponding quantities in the risk-neutral complete model. And in the McDonald-Siegel model, as the gamma, the risk aversion, goes to 0, then we recover the beta, the investment trigger, and the option value in the McDonald-Siegel model. Okay, so all of these quantities converge as we would have hoped. But what doesn't happen is that the regions where we get a solution differ. Okay, so now I will resort to using a pen rather than a pointer because I want to draw things on this. Okay, so this is basically just a representation of the different regions in the three models. Okay, so on the x-axis I've got the correlation, and if the correlation is 1, then the critical value of the project Sharpe ratio xi, below which you invest at some point and above which you never invest, that was given to be lambda. So this is the complete case. So if you're beneath that, you have a solution and you will invest at some point. And if you're above lambda, you just wait. Okay. And then this lower line represents the McDonald-Siegel model. So the project value there was lambda rho. Okay, so that's this lower line. And if you're beneath this line, you'll invest at some point. If you're above that line, you wait. And in the incomplete model, you end up getting the top line, so lambda rho plus eta on 2. So as long as you have some volatility to your project value, then There's this extra region in here, and crucially, if the correlation is high up here, where the McDonald-Siegel model or the complete model basically say you should wait forever and not invest. But as soon as your correlation is less than one, or you're properly thinking about the risk aversion associated with this unhedgeable risk, then basically you should be investing inside this extra region. Okay, so there are extra situations in the incomplete model where you should make the investment, whereas the other classic models tell you you should wait forever. So introducing the incompleteness has done more than just change a few option values here and there. It's actually giving you an additional region where you should be investing at some point in the future rather than waiting forever. So it's really changing the nature of the solution. And if you're using this kind of thing in practice, then thinking about the model with correlation one could give you completely the wrong answer to your problem, because really if your asset has correlation 0.9 or even 0.99, then you're really in this region up here, and really you should be investing rather than waiting forever. So that's what comes out of this model. And if we look at some graphs of the option value and the investment trigger, the first graph I can show you, so I'm going to have two sets of graphs. Maybe I should keep hold of this slide. So one set of graphs I'm going to show you puts you into this bottom region where it's going to be optimal to invest in all the models, or where there'll be a solution to all the models. And the second set of graphs I'm going to show you, you're in that extra region, okay, where the classic models tell you never to invest and the incomplete models tell you to invest at some point. So it's going to be two sets of graphs. So the first one is a plot of the option value in the region where xi is less than this critical McDonald-Siegel value. So we're in the bottom region where all the models have a solution. And in this case, things behave well in that the top line is the value of the option in the complete model. So that's if rho squared is 1. And then all these other lines are basically for reducing the correlation. So as you reduce the correlation, the value of the option goes down. And these are the investment triggers, these dotted lines. So as the correlation goes down, your investment trigger level goes down. So that's telling you you should exercise earlier or invest earlier, the more the correlation goes down. So the more unhedgeable risk there is and the more kind of incomplete is your model. Okay, so you might expect that because you could argue that you're sort of risk averse towards this extra risk that you can't hedge, and therefore you should act sooner to avoid holding this, having the situation. So you should invest earlier, and the value of the option is less to you. Now, the other graph we can look at is in the second region. So here's the corresponding picture if I'm between those two lines. So I'm now in the situation where the McDonald-Siegel model or the complete model is giving me an infinite option value. It's saying I should basically wait forever and never exercise. Okay? And this graph, the top line is correlation 0.95. So if I took the correlation to 1, the value would just be infinite. And if I took correlation 0.99, the value was so great that it kind of skewed the graph. So the highest one I could put on here was 0.95. Again, this is reducing the correlation as we go down. So again, we're reducing the option value and we're investing earlier. The V tilde is coming down as we become, as our hedge becomes worse and worse. So the interesting thing here, compared to the other graph, is that the option value is no longer convex everywhere in the underlying. Okay, so this is basically the discounted value of the project on the x-axis. And so rather than having a convex option value that you would usually see, we actually have concavity when the project value is very low. And this is basically coming from the concavity of the utility function, okay? Because we took exponential utility or any concave utility, that's what's bringing in this concavity into this picture. So that's quite an interesting feature as well that comes out of this, because typically in complete models and in all these real options models, you would always get a typical kind of convex option value picture. The other interesting thing which comes out of this is to do with the volatility of the project value, eta. Just struggling to keep hold of all these. Right. It's not that one. Okay, it's these two. Right, so if we're in... Okay, before I say this, we could also look at different values of gamma, the risk aversion. And if we did that, then the pictures that I put up would be identical to the pictures for the correlation. So as we increase risk aversion, we would reduce the option value and we would invest earlier. Okay, and if you remember back to the formula, gamma and 1 minus rho squared always appear together. So those are just having the same effect. As we become more risk averse, we want to invest earlier, and the option value is less to you. So this is a plot of the effects of volatility of the project value, so eta, on the option value. So this is in the first case where all models have a solution. And this one is the incomplete value. And these two, I forget which, but I think this is, these two could be either way around, basically. One of these is the complete model, and one of them is the McDonald-Siegel model. So essentially risk aversion zero. So the thing is here that all of these valuations, all of these option values are basically increasing in the volatility eta. Okay, and that's, well, if we're in a complete market or the McDonald-Siegel model, then that's exactly what's documented and exactly what you'd expect. And in this situation, the incomplete model also, the option value increases in the volatility. But if we look at the other situation, the second case where you can only get a solution in the incomplete model, then things change dramatically and we end up with something more surprising, a picture like this, which is completely the reverse. So now we have the option value basically falling with eta, with the volatility. And this is the extreme case. If you choose eta low enough, then the beta gets close to zero. So this is when beta is zero. And when beta is zero, the option value is infinite. Okay. So it's just basically declining away from this infinite value as the volatility increases. So this is... Well, it's natural that this comes out of an incomplete model, but because people don't really think of this in real options, then this is somewhat surprising, because people in real options always think that more uncertainty should increase the value of the option. Okay, and that's definitely true in a complete situation, but it's definitely not true in an incomplete situation. So it's sort of like a folklore that's not going to be true as soon as you introduce sort of non-tradability. Okay, so all these things about the convexity and concavity and the volatility properties, you can prove all of those properties because you have this closed form solution. So I've just produced graphs here because it's nicer, but you can prove everything in this model because you have a formula to differentiate and to work with. Okay, so given the time, I'll just wind up. So the conclusions. So I can introduce non-tradability into these classic real options models, and I can get back the complete model and this McDonald-Siegel model as limiting cases of this incomplete model. So an interesting thing is that if you were using these classic models, a complete model, say, in practice, then it would be telling you the option to invest is worth too much, and it would also be telling you to wait too long to invest. And as we saw, if you use the classic models, you can get the wrong decision because there's this extra region in the incomplete model which leads to investment, which isn't there in the simpler models. So in practice, the kind of belief that it's okay to use the complete models because the correlation is probably quite high, mathematically that's just not the case, because you get different behavior happening. Okay, and I'm looking at various sort of extensions of this setup, different utility functions, power utility, where you have to leave the wealth dependence in there. So interesting things happen there. The downside to that is you can't get a closed form solution as you can for the exponential utility anymore, but you can look at the PDE and do some numerics on that. You can look at different formulations for the process driving the project value. So instead of exponential Brownian motion, you could have something with mean reversion that's popular in real options. That could be solved also in closed form. You could look at a put option instead of a call option, the option to abandon a project instead of investing, and various other tweaks to this situation, but this is really the basic story in probably the only case that you're going to get a closed form solution. Okay, so that's it.